young people are so used to being watched, they're not used to being seen.
You are listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javet, a podcast that presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry. Here is your host.
Hello and welcome back to Our Urban Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Alphonse Javet. Today, we are joined by Amy Williams, who has spent 3 decades doing ministry with youth in gangs and prisons. Our conversation today will explore seeing high-risk youth through God's eyes as having tremendous value and potential, while most of society still sees them through lenses of fear or disregard. Youth ministry veteran Amy Williams ministers to teens involved in gangs and those lost in the criminal justice system with a key strategy of life-on-life mentoring. As a certified gang intervention specialist, she heard God's call to move into a Latino gang neighborhood in Chicago's Humboldt Park community to be a hope dealer, doing street outreach and walking life with the young people on her block. Amy is project coordinator at New Life Centers, bringing in restorative justice programming to youth at juvenile prisons. Amy has been a youth pastor, a re-entry coordinator, and a youth mentor and advocate. She is a graduate of both University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and National Lewis University. She resides in Chicago and loves salsa, dancing, and is a true beach baby. Thanks for joining us today, Amy. That's a long introduction, and there's so much more I can tell people about you, but I just wanted to stop there and thank you for doing such an amazing work in Chicago, and welcome to our show. How are you?
Thank you. I am so good. I'm excited to have this conversation, so thank you for inviting me and, you know, caring enough about the young people that I serve to give their stories a voice. So thank you.
Amen. So before we get started, please tell us very briefly about your family. I do this with all my guests because I want my audience to connect with the guests first on personal level so that they can hear your story. They can talk and then they will able to hear your conversation about the ministry that you are in. But let's start with your story. Briefly tell us about your family.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Maine back in the 70s. My mom is Irish and my dad is African-American. And so growing up being biracial in the 70s, when the law had just passed in 1969, that interracial marriage was legal, a year and a half later, they get married, was very challenging for my parents. I remember people used to ask my mom if she was babysitting. We were called a ton of different kinds of names by family member as well. But I grew up with my best friend, my baby brother, about a 2-year difference. Grew up in Maine, moved to North Carolina, and then found myself, and we'll talk a little bit more about my brother because he's very instrumental in why I got into this work. And now I'm in Chicago. I'm single. I don't have children, but I have raised a lot of kids on the street and in the prisons. And so right now my mom is in Florida enjoying her retirement. My dad just recently passed away, which has been very devastating to just my life. And my brother lives in San Diego with my niece, who is my entire world. And so family all over, but also created my own family with the young people that I serve.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry about your dad. And
thank you.
I'm sure the children that are being rescued or youth that's been rescued, or to them, you are that person that's always going to be in their life.
Always.
I appreciate that too. So what first inspired you? I know that you said that you're going to tell us a little more about that journey, but let's start now. What first inspired you to work with high-risk youth in Chicago, and how did that calling become clear to you?
Yeah, so my brother, again, was my ultimate best friend growing up. You couldn't separate us at all. But then we were separated. He moved to Maine. I remained in North Carolina. And when he moved back to Maine, got involved in some trouble and some situations and relocated to Los Angeles. Mm. While he was in Los Angeles, he became gang involved and was in and out of the prison system. At the time, I was a teenager, and I felt so helpless, like there was nothing that I could do to help him. I was in college, I was in high school, I had no resources. And so I believe sometimes that your deepest pain can become your greatest passion. And I found that now that I am older and I have resources, I can help young people who were in the situation that he was in. And so that really just inspired and motivated me to work with kids that society just kind of wants to throw away. And they're some of our most brilliant, most intelligent, wonderful people who are just caught up, who are caught up in some really bad situations. And that's kind of how I found my way into this work. I'm one for the underdog. So I like to pull for the underdog, and who better than kids that are gang involved or in the justice system.
I'm so happy to hear your heart for them, because not everyone see them this way, or forget about that, just youth in general.
Their value is
different, their personhood is different. And when you are involved in gangs, then it's just different picture. But seeing your passion is inspiring. What does seeing people through the lens of God look like practically in your personal interactions and decision making?
Yeah. So, you know, writing this book really allowed me to sit back and evaluate how is it that I am able to see young people through the lens of God, but most people don't. Really being able to examine what does that mean. And for me, like every day, it just means acknowledging young people, validating young people where they are, and not trying to change young people, but offering them options, offering them other opportunities, but really just seeing the value and the worth that they have. Just because they made some bad decisions, which who hasn't made some really bad decisions? Yeah. I say all of us are just one decision away from being locked up ourselves, right? Like bad decisions. But just being able to say, like, God sees them and loves them. These are God's baby girls and baby boys, right? Like God created them for a purpose. They just don't know that yet. Right. They just haven't embraced that yet. They're caught up. And so for me, it is just walking life with young people and letting them know that they have worth and value.
Yeah. I just want to take a moment and acknowledge also in my introduction, I didn't mention your book. So just let me let the audience know. Amy is also the author of Worth Seeing, Viewing Others Through God's Eyes. This is her book, and we are talking about her work and the book she has wrote about it. Now, let me ask you this. What does meaningful inclusion looks like when working with youth who have experienced trauma, incarceration, or systemic neglect?
That's a really good question, because a lot of our young people do not feel that beloved community, right? Yeah. They do not feel welcomed. They do not feel seen. In my book, I talk about Father Greg Boyle from Homeboy Industries, who says young people are so used to being watched, they're not used to being seen. And so how can we move young people from being watched, right? The cops watch them, their parents watch them, teachers watch them, police watch them, judges watch them. Everybody's watching them, but nobody really sees them. And so being able to see them and let them know that we see them is just an automatic pathway to that beloved community, right? Mm-hmm. Inviting them into a space that they should already be invited to, but being intentional about inviting them into that space and letting them know their value and worth.
That's really good. I love being watched and not being seen.
Yeah.
I can see that. That's incredible wisdom, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
You work with both the harmed and the harm doers.
Yeah.
How do you navigate the tension between justice and mercy in those spaces?
You know, it's really hard. Yeah. I can't lie, right? Like I work with the shooter and the one that's been shot, right? Okay. The thief and the one that has been robbed. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the call to serve both. I don't believe that it's they and them. I believe it's we and us, right? And yeah. So we all belong to each other. It starts with that belonging piece. And so I can't just minister to or encourage the one who has had the harm committed to them. But then restorative justice is about repairing that harm. And mm-hmm. that involves both parties. And God has just given me the spirit of mercy to be able to see through all of that and see the person that God has created.
Yeah.
Not everybody can do that. Sometimes, you know, when I see somebody was murdered and they show the picture and the mugshot mm-hmm. of the guy who, like, you know, killed somebody, I try so hard to be like, you ain't nothing, you ain't worth nothing. But my heart is just always like, oh, not what's wrong with you, but what happened to you that got you to this place where you felt like you could take a life.
Mm-hmm.
And then love on the people to say, God, I understand what it means to lose somebody. I don't really believe there's a tension there. Mm-hmm. It is just a call to love everybody that's involved as we build community. Now, it's two separate things, right? I mean, I don't bring the two together. That is possible, but having compassion for both, so important if we want to change our communities.
Yeah. I think that got to be very tough, though. The tension piece also is, I'm thinking in terms of you have a mom who is crying over her child's, what she perceives to be unjust.
Yeah.
Murder, and then you have another mom who is crying that, okay, he made him, you know, this unforgivable mistake, but let's not kill another life by putting him away for life or whatever that situation is. Now there's a tension, like the community seeing this guy evil, one guy evil because the other one, and there is this idea of justice,
yeah,
pay, and then dealing with the both situations, coming with this idea of mercy, and there is your job, how to
right.
not let those comments, because people are going to make comments about you, because
oh yeah,
you're the perpetrator, you're standing with the criminal, you're standing with the person who took the life of this young man,
yeah,
now you're going to be the bad guy, and dealing with that, even though that did not belong to you, you didn't do it.
Right. That's very true. And I mean, everything you said is so true and so valid, right? Like for one, you could talk about me. I don't care. People talked about Jesus, right? Like they talk about, people talk about everybody, right? So it's going to be what it's going to be. But the showing compassion and love to the family that is struggling.
Yeah.
Right. Like I want to be there because I get it. I understand it. I have lost so many. I'm in double digits of kids that I've buried. Like, I get that part. The hard part, right, is to see the young person that did that, mm-hmm. committed that, understand the story behind it, never validating it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with murder. I don't agree with selling drugs. I don't agree with carrying a gun illegally. I don't. Just because I am loving and walking with that young person and letting them see their value and worth doesn't mean that I agree with the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I don't have to agree. I just have to understand, right? Mm-hmm. There's a difference. I always tell my kids, if you commit murder, don't tell me because I'm going to tell the police, right? There are just things I don't agree with it. But I get the kids who are in the situation and they're already in prison. They're already serving their time, right? They're already doing all those things. They're sitting there being dehumanized. They're sitting there being more traumatized. What a perfect opportunity to come in and say, okay, let's change the direction of your life, the choices that you're making. Let's give you some more options. Let me understand what got you here. We make a lot of assumptions without ever really listening to what is going on in the life of our young people, the life of our families in under-resourced communities. You know, the poverty, the racism, I mean, all of those things. And so I can do both. We should do both. Not everybody can, though, and not everybody will or want to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's a painful situation. It's hard to enter into somebody's suffering because now, once you enter, it's not easy to leave that because you
Right.
have that. Now you are engaged in there.
Now you have to do something,
Right, exactly. So it's
right?
easy to stuck those fingers in your ears, close your eyes, and pass through
You
and
keep
make
doing
that a
it.
problem with someone else. But then
And
once
that's what
in a
I'm
while,
hoping my book will help with,
yeah,
right? Like
good.
help people to see and understand the stories of young people and families that live in our communities
Yeah.
so that they don't do this. They can't say, well,
Yeah.
I didn't know what was going on. Well, now here's a book that tells you what's going on, but it
Yeah.
also tells you what to do, how to
Right.
do it. How can I take this compassion and turn it into action?
Good. Very good. So you mentioned learning more from these youth than any other group. What are some of the most profound lessons they have taught you?
Oh, that is so good. They teach me so much. I mean, beyond teaching me just about gang culture, teaching me about prison culture, teaching me just about youth culture, period, right? Like I'm always in the position of a learner, so I always ask the kids, teach me. If I don't know it, teach me, teach me, teach me. But I have a whole chapter on what I learned about gangs. That you can't Google,
Right,
right?
right.
And it would be things like not every kid that is gang involved is violent, right? There's a small subset of kids that are violent. The rest of them just want to belong, just want to have a family, need money, right? And so they're usually like out on the corner. They're usually like out on the corner. You know, they may be selling something to make money, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going around shooting people. And, you know, I learned that with the relationship that I have with a gang leader, you know, he was telling me we don't want our kids to die either. Like those are our young people, that's our family members. We all think gang leaders are just out here, they don't care about the kids. They just, you know, put them on the street and if they get shot, they get locked up. It's whatever. But the gang leaders I talk to are like, no, we really care about them. I have gang leaders who reach out to me and who say, can you help this young person get back in school? Can you get this young person
Wow.
a job? Right? Like, so there's a whole lot of things, but I think the biggest lesson that I learned was people aren't projects to be fixed. Like, I really thought I was put on this earth to fix the young people to fix all their problems and to make them better people. And I'm like, you know what? They're not projects to be fixed. They have to be the hero of their own story. I get to be a part of that. I can offer options, but it is not my responsibility to fix people. They are not projects. That's huge.
You're right. The idea of belongingness, even like us adults, I mean, you don't have to be in a marginalized community to understand that belongingness is a
Right.
basic instinct that we have. Even in the wild, you will see that in animal kingdom, they are looking for where they belong, and if they are not, even long wolf, a wolf that's just without his pack will die faster because just that how it is. And God has created us with this innate desire to belong somewhere, have that social connection and family connection.
Right. And if the family's not there, if the school system isn't there, if the church isn't there,
that's right.
I mean, kids are going to find somewhere to belong.
That's right.
And if the gang leader is on that corner,
mm-hmm.
and every day that kid is walking to school and sees him, they got this relationship going.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, and the gang leader's providing food, clothing, extra money, right? It's all a recruitment thing.
It
creates this, wow, he's really there for me,
right?
Like, I can depend on him. He sees my need.
Yeah.
He sees me.
Yeah, that's
We have to do better. We have to do better.
Yeah.
The opportunities are there.
Yeah, you emphasize the importance of including marginalized voices in the conversation. How can organizations and individuals better do? You're talking about we need to do better. So how can an organization and individuals do better to practice this do better thing?
Yeah, I love, Glenn Martin has this quote that I love, and it says, the people that are closest to the problem are closest to the solution, but furthest from the resources, right? If you want to know how to solve a problem, there have to be people involved in that issue at the table.
That's right.
And I always say, if you want to end gun violence in Chicago, you need to have young people that carry guns and gang leaders that carry guns at the table to tell you how to stop it. But a lot of times, I remember one time I was invited to speak on a panel, and it was around mass incarceration. And I asked the organizer who on the panel has been formerly incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, huh? And I was like, so we're going to talk about the issue, but we're not going to talk with someone who's been involved in the system. So what I did was I said, here's somebody who's formerly incarcerated. I'm going to step down, put them in my spot, and pay them. So for us, it is about creating those spaces for the voices. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people don't know who to reach out to, but there has to get out in your community, talk to your neighbor, talk to the owner of the corner store, talk to the kids that walk by every single day that you just look at as, you know, that you're scared to talk to. You have to talk to your community and people involved in the situation if you want any kind of solution or resolution or change. You're just talking at the problem, nothing is going to change. Nothing.
And I like what you said, that you step down, so this person takes your place. And that's another problem, especially in the church, when it comes to any topic. We tend to talk, but when giving our place to somebody is hard. And that's not only church or Christian community. I think it's evident in human nature. We want to hold on to what we have. And I appreciate that you making that room for somebody else, making that space for somebody else. And that's, again, intentionality. You got to give up your right to be under that spotlight.
Right. I mean, who better to talk to
about
incarceration than someone who's been incarcerated?
That's
with the restorative justice programming that I bring into the prisons, I try to have somebody as an instructor who has lived experience.
So
we have peace circles. I have people who've been incarcerated 25 years to 30 years come in and lead peace circles with my young people, because those young people need to see what it looks like to get out and thrive, you know, and have those kind of relationships. So it's very important to make sure that those people have voices and spaces to do that. We have to create those spaces, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just imagining what you have gone through all these years and dealing with the dead bodies or burying those kids and dealing with those kids who lost the right to grow up in a free society and behind the bars and who knows what. But let me ask you regarding your mechanism, how you deal with this. What keeps you going after decades in such intense and emotionally taxing work?
I mean, I tell you, I want to quit every week.
I'm so like happy to hear. No, for real. I'm so happy to hear that. That they're like, oh, I do this and I got this. Woo! It's good to like put that front. So it's not an easy job. It's
it is not.
I love the way you started. Okay, go on. Sorry.
Nobody chooses to do. There's not a line out the door of people saying, I want to do this, right? Yeah. So it's really two things for me. It's three things for me. Yeah. The first one is, I know that I know without a shadow of a doubt that God chose me to do this work. Like he trusts me with this work and he trusts me with the young people that he brings to my life. So that definitely keeps me going, right? And we have a lot of conversations like, why did you choose me though? But you know, after 30 years, I'm like, okay, just you, it is what it is. You called me, I'm gonna do it. Two, I have an amazing community of support that when I'm tired, when I'm angry, when I'm frustrated, when I'm happy, I can share those things. I can have people lift me up and pray for me and encourage me or tell me the truth about me. Like, I have an amazing community of support. There's no way to do this work without it. No way. And then the third reason, I've lost a lot of young people. And all I can hear in my head is them saying, you got to keep doing it for me. Mm. There's another kid out there like me. Mm. I had one of my young people, Jonathan, he was my number one. And he had said, I prayed every time I was in prison, I prayed my entire life that someone like you would come in and interrupt my life. And unfortunately, he was killed in a drive-by. And when I want to quit, I could just hear his voice just saying, you can't, Amy. Somebody's praying for somebody mm-hmm. like you. The boys need you. And so my young people keep me going. When I'm ready to give up, this is the truth. When I'm ready to give up, I go to the prison on purpose. Mm. And the young people there remind me of my why. Mm. And that keeps me going. So those three things, God, community, and the people themselves.
Amen.
Yeah.
Well, as we close out, is there anything else you would like to add to this conversation? I'm sure there are a lot, but...
I mean, get the book. Everything I want to say is in the book.
Yeah, I was about to say that, yeah. So it's like, it's very, extremely vague, but anything specific that you want to add? And I forgot to ask you.
Yeah, I mean, I just ask your audience to please give our young people a chance.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, listen to them. Just mm-hmm. listen. Don't respond. Don't try to solve nothing. Listen to them. Give mm-hmm. them opportunities. It's not they and them. It's we and us. We're in this together. They need us and we need them. Mm-hmm. And so... Mm-hmm. Please just give my babies, the young people that are struggling out here, just give them a chance and let them know they have worth and value.
Amy, if listeners wants to get in touch with you or find your books, what are the easiest ways?
The easiest way is to go to my website, ahopedealer.org. So I call myself the hope dealer to the dope dealer. So they sling dope and I sling hope. And his name
That's
is
right.
Jesus, right? And so ahopedealer.org. Or you could just Google me. I'm all over the place. I'm all over the place. And you can purchase the book on ivpress.com. That is my publisher, University Press. I did an audio book as well. I narrated it. So you're able to get that on Audible. But you can find my book at any bookstore online.
We'll make sure all of this information is available in the description of this episode on our website as well. Now, this is the best time, right?
The best time, okay.
For the last thing, because we talk about heavy topics, I would like to ask you to tell us a joke. People need to know that you are a funny person too. Right? So,
Hilarious. I'm
yes, of
hilarious.
course.
I choose to laugh because if I don't, I'm going to be crying all the
I can totally
time.
understand that. So,
Okay, so
go ahead.
this is my joke. Because we talk about prisons and all that stuff, it's a prison joke, sort of. Okay. Did you hear about the wig thief who escaped from prison?
No.
Police are combing the area to find him. That wasn't that funny.
Yeah. You see, I love it that you connected your jokes with your ministry too. Good job. That's good. Thank you so much for being on the show again. That was Amy Williams. And thank you to all our listeners. We truly could not do this without you. If you learned something, have a topic suggestion, or would like to leave us feedback, drop us a note at OurUrbanVoices.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave an honest review wherever you listen to your podcast.
You've been listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javed, which presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry.